Mary, good morning to you, young lady.
Good morning. I have a question about perennials. Are you supposed to cut off like hydrangeas and hostas and daisies and all those flowers, or do you just leave them?
That depends on you. For me, for instance, when you look at hostas, I always take off the flowers. They've really done a lot of work in developing flowers in hostas, but for me, it's always the foliage, so I kind of always remove those flower spikes as they occur. When you look at some of our other perennials, it doesn't matter what it is. Plants just take an enormous amount of energy to produce flowers. And not only that, I mean, their main goal is actually to produce seed so they can perpetuate their species, so they can move on and survive for next year if possible, and spread. And so when it comes to seed production, again, it takes so much energy to produce that flower, but it takes even more to produce the seed. And so what happens is once they go into that seed production phase, the plant figures it's done. It's done its job. And so it kind of sits there and stalls out on you. And so if you want to prolong the longevity of your perennial flowers, by all means, as soon as they start to fade, get unsightly, definitely cut them off, because you're going to prolong it. And you're going to probably give yourself a good week, almost two, of flowering out of that perennial. Does that answer your question?
Well, I want to know in the fall more.
Oh, in the fall.
Are you supposed to cut them way down or just leave them?
All right. So as we get towards winter, there's a couple of things there, too. One is, we have four seasons to deal with here in Minnesota. And for me, I like those four seasons of gardening. And so there are certain perennials out there that I will not cut down through winter. Ornamental grasses would be one of them, our perennial grasses. Another one would be sedums, because it kind of gives you some interest in the winter. So you're not looking at that bleak landscape out there of these white snowdrifts. There are some perennials that just kind of turn to mush. So ideally, what you want to do is as we get to that first hard frost, I mean, you don't want to do anything until we get to that hard frost and it kind of kills off some of the foliage and they turn black. You want to allow that plant to put as much energy into its root system as possible, because that's what it's doing this fall. It's taking that energy reserves that are stored in the foliage and actually pushing them down into the roots. So let them do that as long as possible. They will, as we get towards winter, they may turn a little bit yellow, get that hard frost. They may blacken off a little bit. And it's usually at that point that I'll turn around and I'll cut them down. So ideally, you want to cut them down to, let's say, about 4 inches. And what that does for you is it's Mother Nature's way of kind of giving it a crown to protect it from the wintertime. And so as the leaves are kind of blowing around this fall, they will actually get caught on some of those stems and create this little kind of mulch or this little hibernation or this insulation blanket for your perennials. How's that? Does that answer your question?
That's good. But then I have one more about roses.
Alrighty.
Did you cut off... other than shrub roses, should you cut off other roses, or is it better to cover them with those cones and leaves and all that?
As you look at roses, and that I love the question. So as you look at roses, you have hybrid teas, you have floribundas, grandifloras. Those varieties are not hardy for Minnesota. So really the best way to get to them to survive the winter is a process called Minnesota tip. And I don't know if you ever heard of that or not, but it basically involves digging a trench beside your rose, kind of tipping your rose down and then covering up with earth and then, of course, mulch or hay or straw or something along that nature. If you're going to use the cones, it's a little bit more of a gamble, I would say, because it really kind of depends on our winter. What you want to do is, and then at that point, I would definitely cut it down, because now you'd have to deal with something you have to fit inside a cone. But we have a rosary aunt, Linders, that all he does is he takes mulch, and it might be in the form of leaves, you know, that he rakes up in the fall and puts in the bags. And he will actually mound those up on his roses. And so he just kind of forms this big mountain of leaf bags and whatnot. So it really depends on you. I like to cut things down. The only trouble with that is that as we get in through winter, you're going to find that you get a little bit of winter kill on it. So let's say you cut these roses down to 2 feet. You're probably going to lose another 4 inches through the winter. And so come spring, you got to cut them down 4 inches more. So it really depends on the rose itself. What I always do is I'm looking for the shape and the health of my rose going into next year. And so as I kind of approach winter, that's kind of what I'm doing is I'm shaping it. I want to cut out any of those really weak branches or stems that are kind of coming up and growing up through the mantle. I want to make sure that I'm forming that vase, you know, that outer ring of branches or stems that's going to provide me some nice roses for next year. So health is first, and then I'll kind of cut them down from there. How's that?
That's good. Thank you.
You are certainly welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, with that, we're going to go to a break, and we'll be back in three. Good morning and welcome back to Linder's Lawn and Garden Radio Hour. My name is Mark Armstead, and if you have any questions, please feel free to contact us here at KLWB Radio at 651-275-1220 or call toll-free at 877-646-1220. So before the last break, we were talking about bringing in plant material that you may have out on your deck, your patio, whatever, and some of the things that we need to be doing to it right now. And I want to talk about the last little topic here that we have. We went over insects, possibly controlling them. We talked a little bit about the change in environment between indoors and out. And the last one, I think, is probably most important, and that's the watering aspect, you know, when it comes to the care. As I mentioned before, we get into this kind of subconscious frame of mind where we're in summer mode, and so we want to water, water, water. And during the summer, you almost cannot overwater your plants. But we're heading into a time, and it becomes definitely noticeable. Our day length is shortening up. You know, it used to be light out till after 9 o'clock. Now I think we're seeing daylight hours shrinking up a little bit. So it becomes visibly obvious that our days are starting to get a little shorter. Our temperatures are cooling off a little. Let me stop and rephrase. Not this week. We're heading into the dog days of
summer.
Exactly.
I'm looking at the heat here. It's like 86 today. 93 tomorrow.
I just realized what I said. But typically, we're heading into a time when the temperature is starting to cool off a little bit, and especially night temperatures. So as we look at the care of our plants, we should be changing up the way we kind of look at things. And so with the last topic here, we're going to talk a little bit about watering. We get into the frame of mind, and we as human species, we kind of get into this whole schedule thing. You know, we're brushing our teeth after every meal. We're taking baths or showers every day. We expect our plants to kind of form along that same schedule. And so a lot of times when I talk to people, I'll ask them, how much are you watering? And they'll say, well, I'm watering once a week on Saturday. All right, so let's think about this for a minute. Okay, you're watering once a week on Saturday. You have a couple of different variables that come into mind. One is how much water are you applying? What you should be doing is watering thoroughly. I want to see that water coming out the bottom of the pot. And what that does for me is it somewhat leaches out the soil a little bit. As you look at our water quality, it varies kind of all around the state and whatnot. And let's say you're fertilizing. That watering that you do, the minute you start to see water coming out the bottom, it's actually leaching all this excess stuff that might be in the soil. Not only that, it's pushing out the gases that roots breathe. And so it'll actually push out those old gases that are in that soil, and it creates kind of a freshness to it. So I want to see watering very thoroughly. Well, if you're watering once a week and we're starting to see temperatures diminish, we're starting to see day length starting to shrink down. I mean, our plants are kind of going into this semi-quasi-dormancy kind of situation, and they're starting to slow down a little bit in their growth. And if you're watering that much once a week, now let's turn around and say, okay, we get into a point where it's 88 degrees today and it's 90 tomorrow. You know, it's supposed to be into the 90s for the next week. Oh, maybe that's enough watering, maybe not. But let's turn around on the flip side and say that it's going to be cloudy for the next 7 days. I mean, what does that really do for our plants? Our plants aren't doing anything. And so if you're watering once a week, really bad. So the best advice I can give you is I always tell people, look at the soil, know what that soil is doing. But we get into this whole frame of mind where we start to see that surface of the soil dry down a little bit, and we want to subconsciously hit it with water. Take your finger, push it down inside that soil. Grab a pencil, a wooden pencil, that is, not these new little plasticized ones, but a wooden pencil, and you can, or a chopstick for a matter, and you can push it down into the soil. And if you leave it there for a second, you're going to be able to tell if there's moisture, because that moisture will wick inside that pencil or that chopstick, and when you pull it out, you'll be able to see moisture in there, and you'll know it's still wet. By pushing your finger down, you'll be able to feel if there's moisture. But the problem with the finger method is that if you look at your finger and then look down at the depth of that pot, you can only push your finger down so far. So you really have no idea what's going on down at that bottom of the pot. So here's my advice to you, is I would definitely watch the soil, check it. The minute you feel like you should be watering it, forget it. Look at the plant. Forget what the soil is doing. As long as your plant is healthy, it's perky, it's upright, it's looking good, I would continue to let that water kind of dry out through the soil. That way you can ensure that it's going to be dry or drying down to what it should be. You can always water tomorrow, but you can't take that water away once you do it. So that kind of brings us to the end of winterizing our plants for indoors. I want to get into a little bit about garden mums, too, because we're hitting that season, and it's a great time of year for garden mums. I mean, as we look at fall here, and I mentioned about kind of putting and be done with our whole gardening situation on Labor Day, which is kind of a terrible thing, but garden mums are an inexpensive way to provide some color for fall, and we're starting to see a lot of garden mums being introduced in garden centers. And so here's a great product. But one of the questions we always get is, I mean, if you look at mums themselves, as I mentioned before and introduced myself, I was grower of potted mums for florists. So you have florist mums, you have garden mums, and you have perennial mums. So what is the difference with them? Basically, they all kind of derive from the same genetics. They come from a Chinese yellow mum way back when. And over time, they've been kind of hybridized. And they're hybridized for different reasons. Maybe they wanted a different color. Maybe they wanted kind of a uniformity of blooms across the plant. Maybe they were trying to bring down the size of a certain mum. So there's lots of different aspects that breeders kind of take into consideration when they're doing their job. But what that does is it changes the genetics within the plant. And so that can have an effect on the hardiness of them. And so as you classify them, like I said, there's florist, there's garden, and there's perennial. Most of our perennial mums, especially here in Minnesota, were actually hybridized by the University of Minnesota, and they have some great mums. They're definitely hardy for Minnesota, act just like a perennial, come back year after year, so good stuff. A lot of the other stuff that you see out there, let's say the garden mums, is they've been kind of bred so that you get more color out of them, and it's kind of a one-shot deal. So as you look at that, you kind of breed for uniformity. And what they've done is when they take the breeding from this original yellow mum from China, they actually cut down the amount of time that it takes to bloom. And so as you look at garden mums, most garden mums will bloom in like a 6 to 8 week bloom period. And what that actually is it takes into consideration of day length. And so as we look at our temperature, our day length starting to shrink down or shorten, it only takes 6 or 8 weeks of those short days. That's the difference between daytime and nighttime. So the nights are starting to increase and the days are starting to decrease. Most of your garden mums bloom in that 6 to 8 week period. And so you get kind of a nice fall presentation out of them. And you could turn around and take a whole row. Let's say you plant 10 garden mums out in your garden in a row. The drawback to a garden mum is, for no reason at all, one will just die out. Could be on the end, could be in the middle. And then next year, another one may die out. And so you kind of keep replacing them. So they just kind of die out for no reason. So they're kind of this half-hardy situation. If you do want them to survive, I would definitely recommend that you get out some hay or straw or whatever kind of mulch that you're using and cover them this winter, protect them. The other drawback to that is we don't give them enough time here in the fall to actually root out. Ideally, you kind of want to get your plant material in a good 6 weeks before we get a frost, and that usually gives them time to establish their root systems and kind of develop into a nice plant and get established before the onslaught of winter. The other thing with our florist mums is we've had some people come back and say, you know, I bought this mum at a florist, and I turned around and I planted it outside, and it continues to come back, but I'm not getting any blooms out of it. The thing with florist mums is they usually take about 10 weeks before they actually kind of come into bloom, 11 weeks maybe. And so what that means for us is that we'll plant that mum outside, and it'll come back year after year like any good perennial would. But the drawback is there's typically snow on the ground before we start to see flowers anymore. So there's a big difference between the mums. But like I said in the beginning of the show, it's an inexpensive way to kind of provide some fall color and really kind of give you that oomph as we kind of go into fall. Yes, we're going to be back next Saturday. So by all means, send in your questions. You can contact KLBB Radio at 651-275-1220, toll free at 877-646-1220. But email your questions to linders@klbbradio.com. No dits, no dashes, no underscores. Or you can always contact me at Linders. And it's basically my name at linders.com, MarkArmsteAd at linders.com, or 651-488-1927. I would love to see some topics. Maybe we can kind of create a show out of them in the future. And just remember, I'm here for you, and I'm here to answer all your questions. So by all means, send them in. And with that, we're going to slide out of the show.